we go. 906. Let's get Tom in here. I saw him over near the coffee machine, and I think we both might be wearing the exact same shirt. Oh, God.
It's not exact.
It's close enough to be upsetting.
You know, I have one shirt that looks exactly like the shirt, and I have retired that shirt.
That's right.
I never wear
it. You
want
to give it to
me? I don't care. Won't fit you. Custom. With French cuffs and my initials. And I never wear it because I hate walking in and wearing the same clothes you have on.
That I, yeah, my feathery cuffs.
Look at this one. It's not feathery. French. Feather cuffs. There's no such thing. What?
You mean, are you trying to say that his was tailored and you got yours at Value Village?
Exactly.
Yeah. And mine yet, draws, and that's they the look equally as good.
Exactly right. That's what burns John.
No, because you touch it. It's called the hand. The hand is the touch, the fabric. All right, here we go. That's enough fashion talk. Boy, oh boy. Tune in, by the way, to the video. It's very upsetting. Because I think I look good. I look over, I see you, and I see your face on my body, and I don't feel well. All right.
Yeah, but you feel smarter, don't you?
That doesn't matter. Anybody can be smart.
That's
just
right.
Read a book. All right, let's see. City conducts 69 homeless sweeps. Oh, good. We're talking about homeless right off the top. First 4 months, 2018. We find out from this story from Cairo 7 that apparently... they have a lot of repeats on this. Lisa Herbold, is that how you say her name? She's on the city council. She's got all. Explains how the city is doing getting people into home and housing.
We want to ensure that we're cleaning up trash. We're not cleaning up people.
The Seattle City Council Civil Rights Committee held a briefing on a 2017 encampment monitoring report. It included data on nearly 70 encampment sweeps this year, many of them repeats. And committee chair Lisa Herbold insists the city will soon release figures that show 30% more people got housing last year than the year before.
Why do I always have a problem with that, Tom?
Well, you think that a 30% sounds like a big jump,
yeah,
unless it's only three people.
Give me a hard number.
And you get one
there
more.
There you go.
Four.
Welcome.
There have been about 5,000 exits from
There's
homelessness.
A hard fact.
Since when,
though?
To permanent housing, but yet we still see so many.
She doesn't say. There have been 5,000 people have moved into permanent housing, exiting homelessness into permanent. Since when?
I think we had that stat in the last year, I think.
In 5,000? They've moved 5,000
out? We had that stat somewhere in one of the stories we did in the last week.
Okay, all right.
In that particular cut, she doesn't mention.
Okay.
We'll have to track that down. That's why we have producers.
Is there a plural on the end of that? Hang on.
Well, we have interim, and we have about-to-bes, and we have past producers.
I am in the middle of a news story.
Yeah, that's right. I'm trying to save you from it.
Much visible homelessness. That's because more people every day are becoming homeless.
Wow, more people every day are becoming homeless. More people are becoming homeless.
Okay, so I think you're missing the point of this particular story, though.
The point is they did 69... And so they did 1.15 a day. That's how much. And it cost last year in 2017 $4.3 million because there's seven different agencies. And when Real Change tried to find out, hey, what's it cost for a sweep? They had no numbers because the city doesn't communicate with the seven different departments. And no one was able to give Real Change when they went ahead to look into this thing. Hey, what does it cost to do one sweep? They didn't know.
Okay.
So they totaled it all up. They did all this research, and Real Change comes up with this article last year, and they said, look, between overtime for police, between the other folks that have to be in there, the garbage collection, the amount of garbage, all that, the people have to sort through all the garbage, people have to track it all, label it all, they came up with the number $4.3 million is what it cost in 2017. So these guys did 69 sweeps, which is 1.1 a day, over 80 days.
Yeah, since the beginning of the year.
And then they repeat them. So how many of them were actually done? So you move them out. Tom, just pointing to the absurdity of this system.
Okay.
You sweep them out. Here's, let me just explain, because a friend of mine is a cop whose name is Dave. Explain to me how it works. You go in, you warn the guys, hey guys, within 72 hours, you got to move out, right? So the cops come in, and the garbage men come in. And the garbage men come in, and they pick up all the garbage. And they sweep it all up. And the homeless guys stand there with their bags. And then the cops leave, and the garbage guys leave, and the homeless guys set their tents back up. That's the reality.
And then they get swept again. I think the thrust of it, I mean, what you're saying is the same thing you've been saying for like the last 2 years,
because
I guess.
These guys are saying the exact same thing every time as well, Tom. So I'm just going to continue to repeat the absurdity of it. Go ahead.
So the thrust of this, the reason it's our top story today was just that the city has decided, we think that since the homeless problem isn't getting any better, that they're not doing anything. So they said, so listen, we just need to sort of let people know, here is what we're doing. And if you, in effect, we've established that there have been 5,000 exits from homelessness to permanent housing. That is a significant claim. The fact that there have been 69 sweeps, in effect, is a significant claim. If it's 30% more people got housing last year than the year before, that is some improvement. Now, you put that all, so you need to know what the city is doing. If the city is just, is sort of keeping its head above water, but that's all.
Yes.
They say that it's not that we're not swimming. We would be in worse shape if we hadn't been doing this. Uh-huh. It's just that more housing has continued to be, more homelessness continues to keep abreast, and so we can't catch up with it. But the idea is we're not doing nothing. That's the basic thrust. It's kind of a PR campaign for saying, what exactly are we doing?
Yeah.
Now, having established that, then you could say, well, it still is not enough, or it's not efficient, all that. But, I mean, the point of this particular article is that they're going to try to keep us abreast of what we are doing in the city.
Do you think it's money well spent that you go in there, you move people out, you pick up all their garbage, and they move back into the place? Then you come back a couple of weeks later, you pick up all their garbage, they move out for about 5-10 minutes, maybe a half an hour, then they move back into the place again. Because she even said, hey, a lot of these are repeat places. So a lot of them, multiple sweeps. So overall. So the three questions you'd have for your elected official. One, 5,000 over what years?
Okay, we'll get that. I mean, I don't think she's trying to hide that.
30% over what? 30%, what's your hard number on that one? Just give me the real facts. Okay, don't give me the 5,000.
The thing is,
don't give me the 30%. Just give me the hard facts.
The problem is that this is a story. This is just a TV story that was doing the general pitch.
Just a TV story?
Yes.
In other words,
they don't have all of it. And so now we're kind of judging them harshly on information that wasn't deprived. It just wasn't provided in a 2 or 3 minute TV story. That's all they're established.
Tom, do me a favor. Your prejudice against TV keeps coming through. Stop using the word just. Here we go. More from just the TV story. But many of the people living on the streets are simply being moved from one place to another.
When we spotted him, Charles Knight was piling up what remains of his belongings.
And I've been in a lot of sweeps.
You've been in a lot of sweeps.
Yes, a lot. From the field to the stadium to Spokane Street. Dearborn.
Now he can add Yesler Bridge to his list.
This week, we didn't know about. It just popped up.
Okay. So there, guy's going to go from one place to another.
Yeah, to another place. It's not the same place. They go to different places. And the problem is, in that, we're disrupting his life. There are a lot of people against the sweeps, especially on the left. Yes. Yeah. I mean, for that being unnecessarily disruptive. Some people think this is probably a good thing. If every time you sweep, you end up placing somebody in a better place, then, through a series of kind of attrition, you end up getting more people placed, perhaps.
Let's do this. Let's ask one of our producers.
Okay.
The first one
that comes to mind.
How many people have moved from homelessness to shelter? But see, that's the problem, because we're not saying they don't have homes.
No,
they can just have a shelter.
No. Well, this particular number, 5,000. So I don't know what it says. Permanent housing.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Find out how many got permanent housing.
That's what she's citing is a figure of 5,000 moving into stable permanent housing, which is actually an improvement on what they'd projected for 2017. They'd projected about 3,200 people exiting.
Uh-huh.
However, she says that report is forthcoming. The question is, what are the millions of dollars being spent on the sweeps? Is that an effective use of resources? The city's just trying to say, hey, we're doing something about it. We're moving people along.
Right.
Yet there's all these people that are just shuttling around the city.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, there we go.
So,
we want to thank Kyra for just doing a TV news story for us. Why is traffic suck so bad? Because people like to look at feathers. That's the problem on that one.
Don't you?
No, I would not. If I were on the other side of that and if people were slowing down, I would be honking that horn. Rubberneckers.
So pretty.
No. A truck, they think the driver might have been a little drowsy. He happened to hit the guardrail. The thing sort of tipped, and then all these feathers flew out of the back of his truck, and then they were all over the highway.
That was some great sound. Did Tracy get that? The driver actually admitted to being kind of, he hit the guardrail.
Tom's thing, being the unsympathetic bus driver rider that he is. So why didn't people just drive through them? They're just feathers.
That's what you said this
morning. No, you said that. Wait, you know what? I was looking at you and your shirt. Words came out of my mouth. No, you said it. You said just drive through them. That's what you said.
Well, yeah, the idea is if it's just a bunch of feathers, let them get caught up in the wind.
Right. Let them go back to where they were.
Just like you said. But still, you would rather gawk at them.
No, you'd
rather slow down and gawk. I say just power through and you go, oh, but look at how pretty they are.
On Friday, I'm going up to Tacoma and there was an accident on the side. I didn't even look. I don't even know how many cars were involved. Could have had 100 people involved. Mm. But I refused to look. I'm not going to look. Because the nuns taught me that self-discipline. But everybody else slowing down to gawk at it, to go down to 10 miles an hour or 5 miles an hour, everybody has to look at the flashing red lights. It is a weakness. And then here's the beauty part of me. Andrew, get ready. I realized, not you, the other Andrew in the other room, he keeps track of beauty part. I remember one time when at St. Aloysius Academy, they made a really big deal that they were going to have a rock band come in and play at our first Friday service.
Okay.
But the nun said, it said it had electric guitars. Electric guitars, Tom. Not just the one the devil plays.
The kind you plug in?
Yes. The electric one.
Yes.
And they had a big drum set with a hi-hat and cymbals and a snare and two bongos.
Okay.
I'm painting pictures. And the nun said, listen to me. If any one of you turns around and looks back at those people playing rock and roll music, I will be right on top of you, which means that she'd come along and she'd grab your sideburns on the right-hand side of your head, Tom. So the band begins by playing Born Free, which is not exactly a Christian, Catholic song, but they bust into Born Free. And a lot of kids would turn around looking back, and then was right on top of them, slapping them in the back of the head.
Born
with
Free?
I know.
From the Lions movie?
Yeah.
Born Free? There's nothing anti-Christian about that. I don't think you meant Born Free. Born to be wild, maybe.
Born Free. I still remember it. And I remember thinking to myself, what a good person I am that I'm not turning around and looking. I never looked back, never, ever looked back. And So when I saw those people on Friday looking at the car broken down the side of the road, I thought, you know what? Now I feel sorry for them. I feel sorry for them that they did not have the same Catholic school upbringing that I had. And then all of a sudden, my heart was open.
And you were singing Born Free.
As free as the wind blows. Let's see. Seattle has an appetite for construction, and it's creating cost problems when it comes to knocking a house down or knocking apartments down. Yeah. You end up with a whole bunch of wood. You got drywall. You got lumber. You've got copper. There are various places around the city that will help collect all of that and then allow you to reuse it. I used to do that. A house in Queen Anne, we redid almost the entire thing with all reused wood.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, so the company that's being highlighted here in Seattle Magazine, seattlemag.com, they're the only ones in the city that do this.
Yeah.
They're a demolition company, and they demolish the stuff, and then they give the material to places like reuse it and that kind of stuff. But what's interesting about this is, It's one more impact about, so we have this booming economy here and it has all sorts of, positives. Some of the drawbacks are maybe the homelessness issue, but another one is the landfills, because we have construction waste accounts for 1/3 of the city's landfill totals. And so it's a profile of this one particular guy who started this demolition system and how he does it and how he makes a profit at it. And it's pretty significant. They say that the construction is so... I mean, it's booming. I mean, every crane here is involved in helping, rebuild something that's been destroyed. Mm-hmm. And who knew it was such a problem? And we're doing our best to try to deal with it. The more we can recycle, the less we landfill.
I'll put a quick commercial. Which place is that? Is that Second Use? Which one is that?
No. So Dedicated Deconstruction is the name of the company. And what they do is they strip it and then they give it. To places like
Second Use and places. Yeah, one in Ballard, and then there's one down near Soto as well.
So this
great
is
thing, go in there, you get old kitchen cabinets, you can get marble, concrete, you get sinks, old timber. Mm-hmm. We tried to buy an entire gymnasium floor because we were going to do our entire, all of our floors in that old oak. And it even still had the paint on it from like the hash mark and and we even had, I forget which thing it was, but they had a picture of it and they had a big Indian head on it. It must have been some old high school that had an Indian mascot. So you could buy all of that lumber.
This article highlights a particular bar that used the boards of an old bowling alley for its, for its a bar. And it's like, it's the way things can get recycled. It's cool.
Yeah. Good stuff. All right. By the way, weekend coming up. Of course, it's also a holiday weekend. If you decide that you normally get up at 5 in the morning on a Saturday or a Sunday, if you happen to sleep past your normal time, what happens to you, Tom?
Well, we have been told in the past that whatever your sleeping schedule is, you should keep it consistent. You shouldn't change it. So on the weekend, like if you don't sleep in during the week, don't sleep in over the weekend because it'll throw your system off. Mm-hmm. Now we have a study that says something just about the opposite. The suggestion here is they did this big study in Sweden over 13 years, and they looked at, you know, what happens for people that sleep in on the weekend, like mm-hmm. I do. I like to catch up on my sleep. Is that a good thing or it's a bad thing? So they start off with saying, if you sleep on average 5 hours a night during the week, if you do that consistently, you are going to die much younger than somebody who gets a good 7 to 8 hours of sleep.
Okay.
But if you get 5 hours of sleep during the week, but then catch up and get like 7 or 8 hours of sleep on the weekend, you have the same mortality rates as someone who sleeps 7 to 8 hours all the time. So in other words, according to this study at least.
You can make it up.
You can make it up. Now,
you always heard you can't.
You always heard you can't. And this is just a preliminary study. And they say they need to have more factors involved. One person argued as kind of a critic, says we shouldn't think of it as like a financial transaction. Oh, well, I'll spend 5 hours here and there, but then I'll catch up with it and balance it out at the end. That the argument isn't it doesn't work that way. The better way to look at it is it's a diet. Sleeping in on a weekend is like eating a salad after a series of hamburger dinners. Healthier, sure, but one perspective, the damage is already done. Mm-hmm. So it's a controversial study in that it's the first time that actually suggested that, but they do have, based on 13 years of Swedes sleeping and not sleeping, at least in terms of mortality rates, you can catch up.
But the difference is, let's say you wake up at 4 o'clock and you go for a run and then you have a full, rich life. The other person is sleeping their life away. So you're packing more in.
Yeah, well, that's true.
So die sooner, but you are awake longer.
But you experience just as many hours of daylight.
Right.
It's just that it was inactive. 40 years instead of 80.
Yeah.
Anyway, but that's good news for people like me that try to catch up on our deficits.
And I think this guy deserves a prize. The police had created a perimeter, and he decided he wasn't going to wait for them to bring the bomb squad in. I like that story. Plus, also, we'll find out about Amazon pushing facial recognition to police. I think the ACLU is upset about this. And, oh, by the way, if you want to afford a house in Seattle, just wait 2 years. That's one of the predictions. We'll come right back. Okay. Tom McCurley Show right here on Cairo Radio.
Born free, as free as the wind blows.
Rock and roll?
No, they didn't do it like this. They didn't do it like this, Tom.
Born free to follow your heart.
You're born free to call Keel Mortgage. 1-888-778-KIEL. That's right. Free to call them right now or get them online at keelmortgage.com, CL53969.
It's time you look at a star.
You don't hear that one on the radio anymore. I don't know why. All right. If you don't know what we're talking about, you should have tuned in earlier. We don't have time for stragglers, Tom. Let's see. Amazon is pushing facial recognition to police, and some critics, including the ACLU, spoil sports, are very
upset. 2 dozen civil rights organizations, including ACLU.
All right.
Yeah, spoil sports.
Moo.
Okay. Still, it's an interesting issue.
It is. In China, with the 1.3 billion people, they want to be able to have everybody's face recognized. They actually have police that wear sunglasses that are connected to mobile devices so that they're actually using the facial recognition thing while they're looking at you through their sunglasses. And here's another one for you. In Canada, Tom, imagine this. They identify a face of an individual that has an addiction problem with gambling. The person then walks into the casino, and they can see the face, zap the face, and then go down there and ask the person to leave.
How about that?
Just as a social good, not because he's doing anything illegal. It's just that we know it's not good for him to do that. I would think that would raise the civil libertarian hackles of John Curley to the roof.
That's in Canada. They can do whatever they want in there. I don't care. Yeah, it's in Ontario that they do this. The Ontario Gaming Commission is making use of facial recognition technology to help a person with a gambling addiction stay off of casinos.
Oh, okay.
All right. So the idea that Amazon is pushing this, and they would like the police to have it. They wanted the police to buy it. There's 18,000 police departments across the United States. That's a lot of good money for Amazon.
Yeah, well, that's the news here. So facial recognition's been around for a while, but they say they've been relatively obscure to most of us, anonymous corporations. But now that Amazon is pushing facial recognition, they say this has a chance to really take off because it's so broad-based. And the concern is that they are pushing it really hard toward police departments. Washington County and Oregon was one of two police departments, also the Orlando Police Department. They were sort of given this tryout for Amazon, and they're all singing its praises. And so the question is, how is this good? Well, here's how it's good. They use this, the FBI and the CIA use this to track down possible terrorists that they're looking for.
Or spy on Trump.
First off, they didn't spy on Trump, but every time you repeat that, you're doing the work of Trump.
Okay.
So, you Trumpista. The thing here is that it can be done for good if it's applied to tracking down criminals.
Yes.
The bigger concern is we have like 130 million of us are in some kind of database. Most of us aren't criminals, but they can use that to do other more nefarious things. But for the good things, for instance, they cite an example of they managed to find at these big carnivals and these state fairs, they can find lost kids by using this facial recognition. And the idea is that a lot of good can come from this. So the question is, if it's a lot of good can come from this, what kind of concerns? And the concerns that are being raised are just that the police could end up profiling people that shouldn't be profiled. You go to any kind of a gathering, like a rally, you could use those as kind of oppressive means, saying, oh, look at that person was at that political rally. That person we need to keep track of. They keep track of that person for nefarious political reasons if they see them as somehow, against the state. Mm-hmm. It is an invasion of privacy to some degree.
It is a way to broadcast fingerprints. So the fingerprint, you've got to get the person to have them do the thing and then check it. You could then, the police could come in at a rally. Let's use a rally example. And let's say it's a left rally. So there's most likely going to be violence. So the police take a picture from one of those street cameras that they have.
Yeah.
And they can, and it immediately identifies the faces. Mm-hmm. You've seen it done. It's pretty incredible, right?
Yeah.
So identifies all of it. And then all of a sudden, a red light starts to flash above one face. And it says, this guy is wanted for assaulting police with a rock. So then at that point, the police don't need the fingerprint stuff, can go right into the crowd. The one in China, they have it. They walk right into the crowd. They've got the camera in their glasses, and they walk right up to the guy who's probably dressed all in black and has a Bernie shirt on, and they grab him and arrest him. Now, let me ask you something.
Okay.
Is there a problem with that?
I don't know, because I don't know what it is that they're trying to arrest him for.
They have video of him at a previous rally throwing a bottle of urine or rock or something at a cop.
And then I think that seems like it's police work. The dangerous thing is that what you do is then you're inhibiting his right to be at a particular rally. And so if you do that, if you know, for instance, if you know that you're going to be spotted by cops, That could inhibit people from even showing up or covering their faces. This happened during the anti-war demonstrations a lot, is that the people did not want their faces to be seen. And you're complaining about them. Oh, they don't have the nerve to, just show their faces.
Right.
One of the problems is that you can then use that for, legitimate or illegitimate policing efforts.
So they've had facial recognition technology for a long time. It was used at a casino. When we went down to Vegas to do a story in a casino, we asked about their security purposes. And the guy would let us show some things but not other things. So he demonstrated a really easy one. He said, okay, well, watch this guy walk in. So the guy walks in. They've got cameras everywhere. They walk in. They take a picture of him, right? They freeze it. He sticks it in the computer. And this is a couple years ago, so I'm sure it's much faster. It moves over into this other monitor. And then with that, he presses a button of every single known cheater that has ever come in and card counted in a casino in Las Vegas in the last 10 years. So it was going through within rapid succession of probably like 100 pictures a second or something like that, going through, and then it would stop all of a sudden with another bald guy with brown eyes. And then it would rotate through another one. And then he goes, nope, the guy's not a cheater, not on our database. So all the Las Vegas casinos were all sharing photos. So they all had this system to catch the guy when he came
in. Yeah, that means, there's been a lot of usage. And the question is, do we trust the government and or the police departments.
Don't forget, we are the government.
We are
the ones that let the dogs go on those in Birmingham.
That's why, and that's right, and that's why we have to check ourselves. Is this something we want to go for? What the governments right now are saying they're using it only for criminals, and they're not using it for other reasons. One of the things that got the Orlando Police Department in trouble, they said, hey, with this new Amazon business, we can find the mayor right now. Where's the mayor? We can look at it. He said, we've got so many cameras up, we can track down and find the mayor.
Yeah.
Well, that was a little disconcerting to a lot of people that we're on private citizens. We could track down, hey, John Curley, he's kind of a celebrity. He said something I didn't like on the air today. I wonder where John Curley is right now. And they could track you down through this kind of software. Is that a problem?
No. Well, the problem is that you refer to me as kind of a celebrity. That's the problem. Here's the thing that the people from the ACLU have a problem with. If the government were to take a picture of everybody at that rally that we talked about and store it, that's the problem. You didn't commit a crime. You haven't done anything wrong. But they've taken your photo and they've put it into a file that says possible troublemakers. And they've got you stored there. Yeah, that's the problem that the people have.
Well, the problem is most of us have our faces probably already recognized. I'm not sure it takes the cops to get pictures of us. But, yeah, if they categorize us as troublemakers.
No. Do the police have a photo of you?
I don't know. I would assume so.
Why?
Well, I don't know. I don't know who these 130 million. They have 130 million Americans out of 300 in some kind of database already. I mean, I'm a kind of a celebrity too, I guess. People might know because of Tom and Curly Show. It's real easy to track faces, you know, down if you want to. I don't know who establishes this database, but because there's no regulation, can you trust the departments and or the government to do the right thing? Or should we have more regulations? That's what they're suggesting, maybe. Maybe we should have regulations. You can use it for this and not for that.
Here's what it'll do. It'll spur a new market where people will wear phony nose and glasses. We're going to see them come back. The death of Groucho Marx, it'll come back again.
Also, there is some concern that they don't do a good job, especially with minorities. They say 35% of the time, black women are misidentified by gender. I mean, there are some hiccups in the system.
Police set up a perimeter around a suspicious bag, and one guy just was tired of waiting. We'll come right back with that story right after this. Righteous at MyNorthwest.com. Text as well at 98973. We'd love to hear from you. Wanted to get you a chance to be letter of the day. And I'm pulling double duty today. I got to do Ron and Don.
That's what I heard. Congratulations.
Really? I got $120 for that? Is that what I get?
I thought it was only $100.
Maybe you get $100?
No. Well, yes, I don't know if we should be discussing this.
Why not?
Okay. Are we on the air?
To me, that doesn't seem like much to do 4 hours of nonstop radio with the Ron and Don Nation.
And yet you're doing it. Why?
I'm a team player.
Yeah, good for you.
And I like the fact that what Ron and Don are doing this afternoon, and I want to support that, so I'm doing what I can.
Oh, good. You want to explain what that is they're doing?
They're going out. A friend of ours has got a boat, and they're going to just go on a huge drunk fest.
No, I'm only kidding.
The more of that, the merrier, right?
No. They're going over to Cleveland.
Apparently, you don't want to talk
about Cleveland High School.
Yes.
And Cleveland High School is receiving a bunch of, because their football team doesn't have the greatest equipment.
Right.
So the Seahawks and the Ron and Don Show, and I think probably the Ron and Don Nation, we're all involved in getting new equipment, footballs and kicking tees and helmets, all of those, to the kids at Cleveland High School.
I think that's
great. So they're going over for that, and that's why they're not doing the show. And then they're getting on that boat. I don't know.
And celebrating their
I don't know. I don't know if there's a boat involved. But if there's a boat, there's always alcohol. All right, this story comes from TMJ4, Wisconsin. What kind of... Really, that's what they...
I've never heard of that call.
Never heard of that either. Wow, that must be low-powered television. As Tom would say, it's just a television story, but here it comes. The Wisconsin station reports on one man who took matters into his own hands to rip apart a backpack the police felt was suspicious. Here we go.
Yeah, the witness that I spoke to says he doesn't think the man on the bike was in his right mind during this entire situation. He says as he rode up to the scene, he said, I'm going to defuse this situation before riding up to the suspicious package. Now, it was a wild scene here this morning at Plankinton in Wisconsin. Police called just before 7 a.m. Then the bomb squad took over. Now, the bag originally was on this blue box outside of Moe's. They pulled it from there and into the middle of the street for safety reasons. Then a bomb tech checked on the bag and slowly walked away from it, the backpack seemingly still considered a threat. But then, less than 30 seconds later, the man on the bike zoomed in.
I will refer to him as a hero.
Out of his mind. That's what they said
Tom,
in the beginning.
Out of his mind.
Not in his right mind.
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh, sure. The hero on a bicycle swoops in.
He started ripping everything from the backpack before law enforcement tackled him to the ground. At this point, police are unsure if there were any dangerous explosives in the backpack.
I would say the answer is no, since he's still there.
But for witnesses, this was a scary sight.
If I would have saw him coming down the sidewalk earlier, I probably would have tried to stop him because it's a scary situation. You don't know if it's a bomb or just a backpack. And when he went and did it, I'm like, oh, no, he's not going to.
He had a 50-50 chance, Tom, but yet our hero put his life on the line.
And, well, you know, he's going to hurt himself bad.
Now, the FBI was called in for this situation, which is protocol, but the man was arrested by MPD. He's being interviewed by them now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, yeah, he's your hero. I thought this was it's a funny story because nothing bad happened.
Yes.
And you were pointing out, so there's a backpack, and the police have to treat it as if it's an IED, mm-hmm. some kind of explosive device, just in case, because it could do a lot of damage. If the police had done what this guy had done, they would be probably called up on all sorts of charges.
In the story, the cop went up to the bomb guy in that great big outfit, went up to the thing, right?
Yes.
And he checked it out.
And then
he walked away.
He said he backpedaled, acting as if, okay, this could be something dangerous. So to me, that's a sign that, this bomb expert, based on what he saw, cannot determine that it's not dangerous. But so then you've got a guy, I think it's odd that the TV story calls the guy, not in his right mind. It could be just a guy like John Curley who gets impatient at all these looky-loos.
Yes.
And, I'm going to take care of it. The fact that he used the phrase, I'm going to defuse the situation,
sounds clever.
Like a clever,
it's just, yeah,
witticism.
Right.
And so he just did it. He saved people probably 2 hours of, delay.
He's like Deadpool.
Yeah,
Deadpool 2.
He could be, Deadpool 2, where he blows himself up in the first 5 minutes. That's not a good...
I didn't see that one, so don't be bringing pop culture references up on me. All right.
Well, it's a great
good
movie,
for you. But... And I'm not going to encourage it on the radio that if there is that sort of perimeter set up by police, you rush in and defuse situations. But just goes to show you, there's a hero in my book. Somebody give him something. Give him a check for $300. That would be like doing Ron and Don 3 times. Come right back.